Your Honor, please the court. I'm Phil Davidson, a member of the Tennessee Bar as well as this bar. I represent Mr. Leonard Embody, the appellate in this case. Your Honor, this is an appeal from a summary judgment on the issue, qualified immunity. And the ruling in this case, the court did not examine both tiers of the Saussure case, but simply ruled that there was no constitutional right violated here. Therefore, did not go into whether there was any law that this gentleman should have known about. Facts of this case are that Mr. Embody was walking in Radnor Park, a park in downtown Nashville. Previous to this, the Tennessee legislature had passed a law, and this law said that any citizen in the state of Tennessee that had a valid gun permit could carry a weapon, a legal weapon, inside any park in Tennessee. Legislative history behind this is that Tennessee, as you know, is a very rural state. There's a lot of parks.
Okay, before you move on, the law says that the firearm has to be less than 12 inches long, right?
It has to be. That's correct.
So
there are several rules for legality.
You can't carry any firearm in a park in Tennessee. You agree with that?
No, you cannot carry an automatic weapon. You could not carry this weapon if it was a half inch longer.
Right. And that's one of the issues here is the length of the barrel. That the barrel here is 11 and a half inches long. If it were a half inch longer, it would be illegal.
That's correct.
And whether, okay.
Well, and again, the reason for this is there'd been a series of killings and other things in Tennessee, and the legislature evidently felt that people should have a right to defend themselves there. Mr. Embody that day was carrying a Draco AK-47 weapon, not a rifle, but it was actually a pistol in the park. And he was approached by a ranger, a gentleman named Walsh. They had conversation. Mr. Walsh recognized at that point after the conversation that Mr. Embody had a legal gun permit. He even made a statement, which is this is on the tapes filed by the state, that this appears to be a pistol. And he followed Mr. Embody.
We've got these facts. Where do you think the constitutional violation occurs? What's the key event?
The key event was the stopping of Mr. Embody
by... The first time?
Sir?
The first time?
No.
Second time?
The second time. The second time when Mr. Embody was attempting to leave the park, he was getting in this car. Trooper Ward pulled up, pointed a shotgun at him, and that's when the constitutional violation occurred.
And so it's the constitutional violation of the second stop, or it's the constitutional violation of how they executed the second stop by taking him down?
That's the arrest of him. He was actually arrested, in our opinion, and we allege that in our complaint that he was not free to leave. This was no reasonable suspicion.
He didn't want to leave. He wanted the supervisor to come, and they were told, if you want the supervisor to come, this is going to take a lot longer. So he didn't want to leave until the supervisor came.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the court knows that all police officers are supervised. And if an officer stops somebody on the street and doesn't have reasonable suspicion, if he doesn't have reasonable suspicion, or he does, and then he's kept for a period of time, that reasonable suspicion dissipates, he's got to have probable cause for an arrest then. And in this particular case, they didn't. The totality of the circumstances of this case...
Let's go in segments here. You're alleging that the initial stop, the initial seizure, was a constitutional violation because there was not reasonable suspicion.
There was no reasonable suspicion, and if it was, it dissipated.
Talk about reasonable suspicion for
That's
the
correct.
Next stop. His handgun is within a half of an inch of being illegal. Isn't that itself reasonable suspicion that the park rangers can't tell by visually looking at this handgun whether it's 12 inches or 11 and a half inches or 11 and three quarters inches, that it's so close to be an illegal weapon that itself provides reasonable suspicion to temporarily seize them anyway?
In some situations, yes, Your Honor.
Why not this situation?
Not this situation.
Okay, why not?
Because two things. One, Mr. Ward was, Mr. Ward knew Mr. Embody.
They know he's got a permit to carry weapons.
That's correct.
But even though he has a permit to carry weapons, if this handgun is a half an inch longer, it's still illegal despite his permit. So why isn't that? And these park rangers don't have a measuring tape with them. They have to eyeball this weapon. And isn't it just from eyeballing it that it's at least within the a reasoned judgment that it may be illegal?
Well, prior to Mr. Ward driving on the scene, Mr. Walsh had determined this would be a handgun.
Well, he thought it was, but maybe he didn't know all the ins and outs, and then the other officer may have had a different opinion. That's all. I mean,
here's the problem, Judge. If this court rules that all the police officers and law enforcement officers across the state can stop citizens on the single ground of reasonable suspicion that their weapon may be just 12 inches, maybe just a little bit too long, then we're going to have people being stopped all over the state. That was not the intent of the legislature's law.
But our opinion that reached that conclusion in this case would also include stuff that he was pretty flagrant about how he was exercising these rights. And he not only did call attention to himself, he wanted to call attention to himself. So that's not going to cover every single person out going hunting, I don't think.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully take issue with this. I know this young man. He's not like that. He's a gentleman. He's married. He's a nurse. He's got two children. He speaks two languages.
He brought a tape recorder.
Sir?
He brought a tape recorder.
Well, he brought a tape recording with him because he'd been stopped once before, and he didn't want to have this happen again.
He's walking through a park, and innocent people are raising their hands as if
they're
about to be shot.
You know, I don't want to suppose myself to know the wisdom of the Tennessee legislature, but the Tennessee legislature passed a law, and as a law enforcement officer, a former law enforcement officer, I know I have a duty to enforce the laws that are being passed. Now, and it's not in this brief, but it's in the record that this particular officer did not like that law. He didn't think it was a good law and shouldn't have been passed. But it is in his deposition.
I get this point, and maybe there's something to it, but I haven't seen a lot of cases where the Brady Center and the Second Amendment Foundation both agree on the right outcome in a case. That's this case.
I have seen...
Your position. I mean, that's there's something going on, if that's true. I mean, tell me the other settings where they have agreed on the right outcome in a case involving possession of weapons.
Well, simply because they're who they are, I don't necessarily agree with them. I mean, I've been in one of these situations.
It's a good time not to, but I'm just telling you, that's an unusual event.
It is an unusual event, and I guess the court has to, submit to the court, it has to look at this. I mean, what is the motivation needed to invoke the Second Amendment? I mean, the fact that I want to openly carry a weapon, does that mean that I do not have the protection of the Second Amendment? I don't think that that's what our founders meant, and I would submit they didn't. If I wanted to carry a weapon in Tennessee right now, and I want to slap it across my chest, the law says I can, and I should be given the benefit of that law. The Second Amendment says I can. And so to say that, okay, this guy shouldn't be granted the Second Amendment rights because he was wearing camouflage fatigues, he was openly flaunting his Second Amendment rights, I disagree with that, Your Honor. I believe that, yes, it's like when somebody openly, flagrantly uses their rights under the First Amendment. We don't like it. We don't like what they say. It's despicable. And they're doing it just to use their First Amendment rights, but they got the right to use it. And what his intentions were...
It's a funny Second Amendment complaint because...
I did raise a Second Amendment complaint.
I said it's a funny Second Amendment complaint.
It is funny, Your Honor.
Because the city lets you have weapons in parks. I mean, so it's... I mean, maybe the problem is they're not enforcing their own law very well, but it's strange to be really upset with the legislature. They are letting you carry weapons there.
The Tennessee legislature lets its citizens carry weapons in its parks.
Right.
And its parks are vast. and much more vast than some of the, and that, and the reason they did it is because citizens could protect themselves against predators.
Right, so that's good. I mean, that's why I'm saying it's a funny, do you understand what I'm saying? It's a funny Second Amendment complaint. It would be, it makes more sense in a state that says no guns in parks, which I think is probably a lot of states. That's where I understand a Second Amendment complaint.
I agree.
Here they let you do it.
But
let's go back to the seizure here and also reasonable suspicion for the initial seizure. Besides the fact that this weapon was almost illegal within a half an inch and the park rangers didn't have a tape measure and they had to eyeball it, whether it was illegal or not, your client also painted the barrel orange, so this weapon had an orange barrel on it. What was the purpose of that?
I do not know.
Doesn't that create reasonable suspicion when you have a weapon that has been altered from its standard condition to be a different, unique, unusual thing? The painting of this, that would raise suspicion itself, would it not?
Well, Your Honor, a lot of people that own weapons paint their weapons. I know that's hard to understand, but a lot of weapon owners do paint their weapons. I'm not...
Why would they do that? An orange weapon is normally a sign of a toy weapon,
I believe so, yes, sir.
So, okay.
There is a...
You don't think the painting of the orange paint on the weapon itself would lead to some suspicion?
Well, if they didn't know this gentleman, possibly. But you can't take out of the equation a reasonable suspicion the knowledge of who this guy was by the park ranger.
Even though he has a permit to carry legal weapons, they still have to determine whether this is a legal weapon, right?
They do that, but if this court rule, I'm sorry.
All right, if we get past the initial seizure, does your Fourth Amendment claim accelerate after that, or
well, he was kept there for
two and a half hours.
He had
part of that is because of his request to talk to the supervisor, right? So wouldn't be allocated against the defendants.
He wouldn't have made the request had he not been in custody. He had a shotgun pointed at him. He was trying to leave. He had no intention of causing any trouble there. He's about to get in his car, and so anything that happened after that was not his making. It was the fact that he was in custody and being held there.
So is your claim that the 2.5 hours is too long of a detention, or?
I think it would be too long for most citizens in our state that we wouldn't want to be held without any probable cause.
Okay, but is it a constitutional violation, whether citizens might want to or not? And I mean,
Judge, if the court rules that this stop was legal, what's going to happen is that where does this stop?
All right, I don't really care. I don't really care about the policy. I care about what the law is.
I agree.
Tell me why this is a constitutional violation under the law.
One, there was no reasonable suspicion a crime was being committed here due to the totality of circumstances, the knowledge of deputy.
All right, and if I disagree with you that, what's your next position?
The next thing is that being there was no reasonable suspicion, there was no probable cause to hold this gentleman there, point a shotgun at him, or hold him and put him on the ground, handcuff him, and hold him for 2.5 hours when they knew who he was. And they knew that the first officer knew that this was a
and
pistol.
What's your best case for that position?
The Fourth Amendment, that you can't hold a person without probable cause.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. We'll hear from the government.
I'm Mary Burris with the Tennessee State Attorney General's Office, and I'm here for Defendant Steve Ward. The district court properly dismissed this case because there was no constitutional violation. Ranger Ward had every reason to be suspicious when Leonard Embody went walking through a small state nature preserve, dressed in camouflage and carrying what he said was an AK-47 that was fully loaded and that he had altered to look like a toy. And when his appearance and his weapon...
So the appearance point, I mean, that seems to be his best argument, that this is kind of a discrimination thing. I mean, if you're allowed to carry weapons in parks, you're allowed to be enthusiastic about it and put on camouflage and conspicuously have bullet thing hanging across. I mean, there's just nothing wrong with that. If the government is saying you can have the weapons, is it really fair for the officers to say that's part of the reasonable suspicion calculation, the camouflage and the conspicuous belt with the bullets?
Your Honor, Judge Sutton, it really is a totality.
I get that. So I'm trying to figure out what things go into it. Is camouflage fair? Is the bullet clip fair?
The camouflage, certainly, Your Honor, is part of the equation. When you put it all together, when you put a man in camouflage wearing an assault weapon in a small nature preserve where people go for Sunday walks, and when you add to it the fact that he altered that by making it look like a toy gun, by that, you put those three things together, and then on top of it, you have park visitors who have every right to be in that park and to enjoy their Sunday walk. When they see one after another, when they see this individual walking, and they're in fear, and one raises his hands, and others are pounding on the ranger's door, Your Honor, if you put all those things together, it would be unreasonable of an officer not to stop an individual under those circumstances.
Do you get to stop him twice?
Well,
it seems to me, wouldn't it be a decent rule that says, hey, this is fine. You weren't sure if it was the right length. You weren't sure what it was. They stopped him. That was fine. But after you've stopped him once and you've said go on, it starts to become badgering when you do it again.
I think, Judge Sutton, it's necessary to examine that first step, that first stop. Mm-hmm. At that particular time, the ranger was also on the phone with Ranger Ward and describing the situation of a man saying he had an AK-47, but it looked to be a toy, and it was confusing to the officer. That first step, at that time, that first stop, Ranger Ward was saying to that ranger, back off. In other words, don't continue any confrontation with this individual. Back off, follow from a distance, call the police. So it was Ranger Ward's judgment at that time that for the protection of that ranger, the young ranger, it was necessary to place this in a better position so that something could be done safely about the situation. So I think that first stop needs to be looked at in terms of the judgment that need to be made at that time, that that was not a good time with visitors around in which to initiate a major, what could possibly have been a major confrontation. At the same time that Ranger Ward was talking to this young ranger on the telephone, there were visitors pounding on Ranger Ward's residence to tell him that there was a man with an assault rifle. It's also important to remember that before Ranger Ward did anything other than get in his truck and start to go over to help out the young ranger, Ranger Ward called his supervisor, the chief of park rangers for the state, described the situation, and discussed with him what would be an appropriate action. They were both concerned at that time that that weapon may be illegal. They were also concerned by the fact that the man had this in a at-ready position on his chest. That was significant also. And so
Let's say for the sake of argument, I know you don't think this and neither did the district court judge, but just for the sake of argument, the Second Amendment does apply to parks, okay? So just assume that for now, okay? What's funny about this case is, if that's true, all you have is a flagrant exercise of his constitutional rights. So the analogy to me is someone who dresses up as Uncle Sam, goes to the same park on a Sunday morning, they've got pamphlets, they've got a megaphone, they've got a soapbox, they're just totally into it. To the average passerby, they're a little kooky. But what they're being supposedly kooky about and flagrant about is their exercise of this constitutional right. The officers would never, that would never heighten suspicion of wrongdoing. Here, it seems part of their calculation is punishing him for the flagrancy with which he's exercising his Second Amendment right.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree with that description or that analysis. First of all, in this particular instance, of course, the facts were very, very different, where the park visitors were not.
That's hypotheticals. They have a tendency to be different from the facts in
Surely.
The case. So just answer the hypothetical.
Your Honor, if in fact there was a Second Amendment right to carry a weapon in an estate park, nevertheless, the Second Amendment comes with some boundaries to how it can be exercised. And even if someone were to stand on a soapbox and have a megaphone and hold up a weapon and say, "I have a constitutional right to carry this weapon in this park," even if that were so, if there was anything about that person's actions that would endanger the other people around, that would put the officer in a place of danger, even if that were so, the Second Amendment...
Does the camouflage do any of that?
The camouflage is significant, Your Honor, in that this was a forested area. This was full of trees. It was a nature preserve. And here's somebody wearing camouflage it comes with the implication of a desire to hide.
Or enthusiasm about carrying weapons in the Second Amendment.
It could be both. It could be both. But the question is reasonableness on the part of the officer in trying to analyze the situation in which he has been immediately confronted with. And here you have someone in camouflage who's also trying to not say, "I have a Second Amendment right to carry this weapon," but who's making two statements with the weapon. One, it's an AK-47, it's an assault weapon, and two, it may or may not be real. He had an orange tip on that weapon, which immediately would make an officer confused.
Which way does that cut? If it's a toy, there's nothing to worry about.
Well, the problem was, when he was asked if it was a toy, he said it was real. And so there's an officer dealing with a situation in which he is being told it's real, and the weapon itself is purporting to be a toy. And so you have a question as to why in the world is this man painting the tip of his weapon so it looks like a toy? What's the purpose there? What's the motive? Why do that in dress and camouflage? Why have it at ready on the chest? So if you look at those factors, they can mean any number of things. Any number of things. But
why isn't your argument better made to the Tennessee legislature?
Well, Your Honor, that was the decision of course, of the Tennessee legislature.
That's what creates the problem, isn't it?
And in a sense, as Ranger Ward said in his deposition, while he did not say he did not like the law, he said perhaps it could have been better written. And the law was only about 6 months old at the time. And so he was in the position of having to make some pretty tough judgment calls about whether or not this particular situation comported with the law that allowed handguns in state parks. But
part of his action, the officer's action, arises from the concern of the other people in the park, who apparently are unaware that Tennessee legislature has authorized this kind of conduct.
Judge Dowd, perhaps they were, perhaps they were not. Perhaps if they were, perhaps they also were questioning whether or not this thing, one, was real, and two, was in fact a handgun. It was, as Judge Griffin pointed out, barely half an inch shorter than the legal length. And so by itself, it was towing the line there. So it could very well be that a park visitor who was very cognizant of the law would nevertheless have that fear that this was something other than was legal in the park. When
I take it if he'd come back the next day dressed exactly the same, they couldn't have done anything.
Well, if he were to come back the next...
No matter how people are reacting.
If he were to have repeated himself the next day, Judge Sutton, Ranger Ward, in fact, was asked that in his deposition.
Yeah.
What would you do if you were again confronted with someone carrying the same type of weapon? Ranger Ward said, I would do what was correct for the protection of my officers and the visitors. And I think the implication of that is that you must look at each situation, case by case, situation by situation.
So are you saying, forget what he would have done, I'm asking what the Constitution allows. Are you saying the next day he could have been stopped for doing the exact same thing?
If he came back the next day, of course, one, they would know that weapon at that time because they had researched.
That's why I'm asking that. But everything else is still with the same enthusiasm and generating the same responses from park visitors.
Your Honor, if he had come back the next day and he, in fact, had the same weapon and went through the park, if park visitors again complained to the rangers, at that time, they would have been knowledgeable enough about that weapon to be able to say, we have researched that weapon.
The very quick answer is, of course not. Right?
Well, then the answer, of course, is no, Your Honor.
Okay, so right. Now, how about if it had been someone, a different person? But, you know, so it's not the same person, but everything else looks to be the same. A lot of enthusiasm. Colored tip, AK-47, looks about the same length. Reactions by park visitors. Could they stop again and do what they did to him?
Your Honor, I can't speculate as to that, but
no,
I do.
No, it's the Fourth Amendment requires. It's a legal question.
Then, Your Honor, the question would be to the officer whether or not there was, to that officer, any reasonable suspicion of criminal activity.
I got the question. I want the answer.
At that point, Your Honor, I cannot give you a yes or a no, because, again, it depends on who that person, what that person is doing. If that person is doing exactly what Leonard Embody was doing, wearing camouflage, wearing the same weapon.
That's the question, yeah.
All right. Then, Your Honor, the answer is very clear that there would be no reason to stop him at that time.
And the Fourth Amendment would prohibit it.
And the Fourth Amendment would prohibit that. But that was simply because of the knowledge that the officers would have had that they did not have the prior day.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the difference here. That really makes the difference. What they didn't know the prior day was the reason why that weapon looked dangerous and looked to be out of the, perhaps out of the legality of a handgun, and also looked to be altered. I have not discussed the detention. All I will say is that the officers went about that in as expeditious a manner as they possibly could. As soon as the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau said that this was a legal weapon, they immediately got the weapon out of Ranger Ward's truck, returned it to Mr. Embody, told him he could leave, and he did. Your Honor, based on this, we would ask this court to affirm the dismissal that the district court found in this case. And I thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Davidson, some rebuttal here.
Your Honors, unless the court has any questions of me, I have no rebuttal.
Well, what if the same event happens again, but a different person? Wouldn't the officer still have the right to examine that weapon to make sure it was within the law?
Well, Your Honor,
I would have given a different answer than she did. I would have said I'd have checked out that weapon again because I'm not sure it's the same weapon.
Well, I think it has to go to this fact. This weapon was checked out. That's what we've said. Deputy Walsh, Ranger Walsh, was accompanying Mr. embodied the whole time. He looked at the weapon. He said he understood that it was a pistol. He testified he wasn't threatening anybody. The problem with this 12-inch rule is that, you know, how it was applied here. This gentleman was leaving, and then Ranger Ward stops him, points a shotgun at him. Now, I'm simply saying I understand the legislature made this law and how officers going to enforce it. Well, for one thing, you don't come down the side of stopping people every time you see them with a weapon just to make sure that it's 12 inches long.
Even if the people are complaining about it or concerned, and he's in camouflage, and it seems to me like he's flaunting what I would consider his Second Amendment rights. He's out there to see if he's going to get the kind of reaction he got. Otherwise, what's he doing in the park with the weapon? Why?
Well, Your Honor, when I was director of the State Law Enforcement Academy and I went to a park, I carried a weapon on me. And I think we've had so many...
Did you carry it to port arms?
No, sir. I didn't. But... I'm not trying to banter with you. I'm simply saying that the legislature passed this law because in rural Tennessee there are a lot of parks and a lot of people go into them. And we've had a lot of crimes in those parks, people in there being a predator. Now,
well, why wouldn't the people in the park think this is a predator?
Well, Your Honor, some of them probably did think he was a predator. But the problem is, as Judge Sutton pointed out, some people think a gentleman wearing an American Uncle Sam suit is a nut. But he's got a right to be that. He's got a right to...
You don't think the officers had a constitutional right to check this thing out under the circumstances? That's why you think you're entitled to money?
Well, Your Honor, I understand that, but the problem with this is the police have got to there's got to be a some line drawn here. I mean, where do you draw the line of stopping people and questioning them? I mean, you know, yes, it would have been nice.
The line is Terry versus Ohio, isn't it? I mean, an investigative stop. That's why they don't have to have probable cause. They just have to have the very low standard of reasonable suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot. That's from Terry. And that's not a high standard. And here, isn't there some reasonable suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot? In fact, it sure looks like your client went in there with the intention of being stopped. And that's why I have the tape recorder.
The only thing, I think he was there to protect himself, to be quite frank, but I'm not going to speak for him.
Protect himself from what?
Well, he had been stopped once before in another place, and this is not in the record, obviously, but you asked the question. He'd been stopped once before in another place. And
dressed like this?
Sir?
Had he been dressed in the same way?
No.
Okay.
No, but I'm simply saying that was my belief for his reasoning for doing this. I would simply say about a Terry stop here is you got to have suspicion of criminal activity. Because Ranger Ward knew this man, because he had seen him with a weapon, because he seen him there with his daughters, because Officer Walsh...
Do you remember the facts in Terry versus Ohio?
I do remember the facts.
I mean, these kids weren't doing anything other than looking through the windows of a closed department store, and they were hanging out. They were loitering, and that was deemed to be reasonable suspicion that they might be casing the place. And, I mean, there wasn't a lot there in Terry versus Ohio.
It was the way this was done. You know, if Ranger Walsh had walked up to him and said, can I see your weapon?
Oh, okay, that's a different... Okay, are you saying excessive force with stopping him?
Well, we're saying...
I didn't think that was your claim.
We're saying that in this particular situation, that we... Put this in our complaint that he was treated roughly. He had a shotgun pointed at him.
Treated roughly?
I thought his
testimony was he was treated professionally with respect by the officers and that he really didn't have any qualms with the way they treated him. I thought that's what
he wasn't roughed up. He wasn't physically abused.
And he was treated professionally. Isn't that what he said?
He did. But he was threatened with a shotgun.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's get to the shotgun. That would bother me if he weren't armed and loaded with a gun in a position where he could readily turn it on the officers. I mean, if he didn't have the gun there at his access, I would maybe agree with you that it was excessive to point the shotgun, but when you've got a subject that you're stopping who is armed with a weapon, I think that's just for the protection of the officers, is it not?
Well, he could have very easily said, put the gun on the ground.
He could have also just pointed at the officer very quickly. I mean, when you've got an armed suspect, well, I think a reasonable response by the officer is to protect himself.
At some point in that stop, that weapon was taken by the deputy.
Okay.
At that point, he should not have been handcuffed. Very easy to see that this weapon at that point was not an illegal weapon, and the holding of him there and keeping him there for that time was an illegal arrest. There was no reasonable suspicion after that weapon was in possession of this officer, and that's what we're saying. This thing just went too far.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I think we understand both of the arguments. Thank you for your legal briefs and your oral arguments today. We appreciate it. The case will be submitted, and the clerk may call.